the buzzer been poured on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. Loyola basketball coach Porter Mosier is going to join us. Took the Ramblers to the Final Four a couple years ago. We're going to talk some mid-major hoops, but Seth, I watched the draft last night. We're going to talk about the draft as well. If I were an NBA coach, you know, or an NBA owner or GM, you know what I'd start doing? I'd start trying to make my team all foreign players. Guys coming out of the United States, they're like 12-year-olds. We got a second-round pick here in Indianapolis, Cassius Stanley, who I think is a great pick, I guess. I don't know. If he'd have stayed in the draft, he might be number, you know, 1, 2, 3 next year. But he's taking this picture because snaps. He's got an endorsement deal. I don't want to hear it. I want all foreign players. I want Luka Doncic. I'm into the foreign players because they're more mature, Seth. That's my little mini rant after watching these guys last night. We're so immature here in the United States.
I'm going to agree to disagree. Look, I understand that. Look, you got to understand the foreign players are pros. They've been pros for a number of years. They're right. 19 years old, 20 years old. But you know what? They've been held accountable by other pros. They're playing with grown men. All right. You cannot make the excuses. Your ability to allow yourself to be coached, understanding playing hard. They've been in systems where they practice multiple times a day in youth basketball overseas. So in the morning session might be shooting and skill work. The afternoon session is going to be weights. The evening session is going to be concept work. And that's non-debatable. But it's kind of a bold statement, Dan. I mean, like, you know, again, we can't stereotype every single guy. Just we live in a world. It's plain and simple. And we hear all this stuff with, you know, name, image, and likeness. Well, you know, the key is, you know, using your name, image, likeness, and using social media and becoming an influencer. And these guys and the people around them, they're going to try to get every dime they can. I don't blame them. Unrealistic. I actually was moved by the emotion of the draft.
Me too.
I was moved by the emotion of the draft. I was moved by, you know, seeing Anthony Edwards with the picture of his mom and his grandma. I was moved by that. I was moved by James Wiseman, his reaction. Obi Toppin's reaction. You know, 8 months of uncertainty. 8 months of working maybe the last 5 months to chase your dream. And then all of a sudden understanding in 12 days, these guys are going to training camp. They don't even get a chance to enjoy the moment because the moment is coming 12 days from now where they're behind in understanding the concepts of the NBA. They didn't get to go to the summer league and play against a bunch of dudes that won't be in the league, having a little bit of success, all right, and acclimating themselves to being NBA players. So
well,
I understand
you where you're from. Let me ask you a question. Okay,
ask me
they haven't had a chance to
ask me anything you want.
They haven't had a chance to enjoy the moment. Nobody does. I mean, you get hired to be a head coach. Guess what? That first week, 2 weeks, you're busier than hell. You don't get a chance to sit back and say, wow, I'm a head coach. Look, why do we treat NBA players so different? You get a job in a steel mill.
They're 18,
all right? You get a job as a 19-year-old in a steel mill. You know what you're doing the next day? You're going to a damn steel mill. You get a job as a 19-year-old going to college. Guess what happens when college starts? You're going to college. We make NBA guys out. We always look for the we always look for the victim part. Oh, they don't get to enjoy it. What? They can go on an 8-day vacation. Why? What do you mean they don't get to enjoy it? They're going to do a media parade around here. Who the hell in this world gets to sit back after they get a job and enjoy it?
Hey, I got a question.
I just got hired at ESPN. Don't bother me for a week.
Can I throw a sock at you right now?
No, Peter,
throw a sock at him. Let's go. Let's play it.
No. Hey, look. Okay, you got drafted. The emotion was awesome. But you know what, Seth? I'll give it to you. Yeah, it builds up. But it builds up for everybody.
Sure.
I'm not feeling bad for nobody. Go earn your money. I'll tell you this. I'm going to tell you something else. A lot of guys made a mistake. You know what's not being valued at all? Like, I'll give you an example. Eric Gordon comes back to Indiana and tries to be, you know, Indiana guy. He's not an Indiana guy. He played there 1 year. Team was bad. Caleb Wesson could have stayed at Ohio State. This is what's not valued until it needs to be. You can stay at Ohio State. He could have had his name in the rafters. I don't know. I don't know what records he might have set. That stuff's not valued, Seth, until when? Until, oh, man, you're 30, 25, 28, 40 years old, and you're like, where do I belong? What's my history? And then you try to slide back in. That's not. I got that out of last night's draft, too. I'm just not as – I get it. It's a journey. I'm just – to me, so many guys make so many mistakes, and they don't understand legacy and history, and that becomes important to you as you get older. I get the money part. Don't get me – I get it. But if you're on the cusp of not being drafted, go back to college.
Well, yeah, I agree with you there. I think that guys look for people to tell them what they want to hear. And the guy that's telling what they want to hear and the people that they're trusting are not the people that actually have unconditional love. They're most times people that are going to tell them what they want to hear because they're trying to potentially get something out of it. And, you know, to me, that's the sad thing. And it's the same thing's going to happen with this NBA Academy. People are going to tell kids where they want to, what they want to hear. They're not going to go to college. They're not going to have anywhere to go back to. They're not going to have any legacy. They're not going to have any history. They're not going to have any memory. And that is a real concern.
It is.
And, you know, like Ashton Hagen should have went back to school in Kentucky. Yeah. Look at Nick Richards. He stuck for the third year. He became second round draft choice. He's got a chance to make a roster. To me, he's a great story. That's a great selection. I mean, it's just, you know, to me, it's a make sense, you know, good story. Everyone needs to run their own race. Emmanuel quickly comes back, understands what he needs to work on. Doesn't moan, gets in the gym, really commits himself, becomes a first round draft choice. So look, everyone has to run their own race, but the guys that leave and think the NBA is a rite of passage, the guys that leave and think don't understand that this is the most exclusive club in the world, it's sad, but someone is telling them that. And you're right. There are guys that sat there last night in absolute shock because someone told them they were going to get drafted. Someone told them they had a promise. Someone told them they were a pro. I say it all the time. That club is exclusive. It's not for everyone. And unfortunately, the mindset, the culture of our sport is every guy that comes out of high school that's got some type of award because they're overhyped, they're overexposed, they all think that transition's easy. Transition from high school to college is brutal. The transition from the college to the NBA, because you're adding in another whole part of the world, is that much more brutal.
Yeah, and everybody says, well, you know, chase the money. College is a ripoff. Yeah, okay. A lot of things are ripoffs in this world, but being a college athlete of great success puts you at the front of the line. Seth, let me go to a couple things. One thing that I just get tired of is steal of the draft. And you'll know who the steal of the draft is this time next year. Right. I mean, I would say this, though. You know, one of the things that I thought was really, really good in this draft and maybe unfair to a certain degree, James Wiseman going to Golden State. And the Klay Thompson thing changes all of that. I get it. But, man, if you're a Golden State and if you get guys healthy, now we'll see what happens with Klay Thompson. But I think he's the most talented guy in the draft, James Wiseman.
You and me both. 100%.
He goes to a team that made 5 straight finals. And if they get healthy, now, again, don't know what's going to happen with Klay Thompson. But, man, rarely does a team that had that kind of success end up because of 1 year in the second pick and the most talented guy falls to him, Seth. I don't know what's going to happen with James Wiseman. I don't know what's going to happen with LaMelo Ball, who was picked after him. And, you know, when you're picked after, now people can give you grief because you didn't pick him. I don't know what's going to happen with Patrick Williams. But I know this. Going into the draft, going into last year, the scouts for Golden State never thought in a million years they'd have James Wiseman on their team. And that's a hell of a move, I think, as you evaluate the top of this draft.
I totally agree with you. I thought he was the best prospect in the draft, and he's also the best fit and the best culture. You know, all of a sudden now he's going in with pros. Now, Andrew Wiggins is part of the Golden State team. You know, losing Klay Thompson will be absolutely brutal, and you feel for a guy. I mean, you think about it, he's gone 17 months now without playing basketball. Yeah. He's working because he loves the game. He's in the gym. He's working on his game. Boom. Who knows what's going to happen with that? But they got Draymond Green, who's a competitive guy who knows how to be a pro. And I think he's the type of guy that will adopt a James Wiseman, put his arms around him, help him kind of adjust. You got obviously Steph. You got Wiggins. You've got a great environment, a great culture. and a championship environment. So I think it's perfect for him. I think the funny thing with LaMelo Ball is the old man said that he could run Michael one-on-one. Well, how about that BS? And here's the other thing. So the Ball family, if you think about this, Lonzo gets drafted, Magic Johnson is in charge. So the old man has to deal with Magic Johnson, and let's face it, he absolutely blew up the Laker organization during the course of that relationship. And now he's dealing with Michael Jordan. The difference is Magic Johnson's a gentleman. Michael Jordan, the bar ball starts to bring that stuff, that ain't playing. He has no, he will have no time for that whatsoever. And that'll be interesting. I don't believe in steals of the draft, but I think, you know, there are a couple things that, you know, I thought were interesting. Sadiq Bey dropping to where he dropped. Interesting. Detroit, I like their draft. I think Detroit, you know, they get pieces that can help them. Killian Hayes is going to be a good point guard, getting lane, getting seams, make plays, sees the floor. You know, he's an American kid born in Lakeland, Florida, but grew up basically overseas. I think he's good. I thought that, like, Isaiah Stewart, a lot of people forgot about that guy, played in the middle of the zone, under the radar in a lot of ways. Was a McDonald's All-American coming out, big body, really bright kid, 7'5 wingspan, can score around the basket, can move his feet a little bit better than, you know, than people think. You know, I thought that was a good pick. And then you get Sadiq Bey. What you've got is, I think what they got is three mature winning players. I think character was a big thing in this draft. What did you think of Patrick Williams at 4 to Chicago? You're right, you know, close by. What was your take on that?
It's literally, he to me was the example of the way the NBA has gone. Young, right? Tall, talented. Remember when Michael Jordan and Jerry Krause, you know, had the falling out, what did the Bulls do? They went and drafted Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry, two high school kids, to try to rebuild this thing. And coach, when I saw that with Patrick Williams, I saw the same thing. But times are different now. A guy like Patrick Williams can come in and have a bigger impact. I think Patrick Williams is a terrific prospect. I do. Look, if he went 4, is that better than Okoro? Yeah, I think it is. Is that better than the kid from USC, Ogonkwo? I think it is. So, you know, the guys that went around him, I got no problem with. Let me tell you a couple things, and I want to go back to something. Because people ask me this all the time when we get talking about the NBA, and it's what I led the podcast with. How good would a foreign team be? And how could you put together a foreign team? Like you mentioned Killian Hayes. Now, I know Killian Hayes was born here in the United States, but he's a foreign player. He's a pro. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and there's a number of these guys. If you decided that you were going to put together a mainly, obviously, foreign team, one, how good could that team be? Actually, one, how quickly could you assemble that team? And two, how good could that team be?
I think if you did that, you'd have to have a foreign coach that understands the mentality. You'd have to play a system that was 100% what they play. Like my brother says, the offenses in Europe far superior. The quality of basketball,
yes,
overseas, the offensive coaching and the intricacies of what they do, how they do it, their flow. It's not just a spread ball screen. It's false motion, two actions. It's staggers, misdirections. It's the number of players and the places that they put guys and how they move people in the action is so much more intricate overseas. You know, it's an interesting concept. I want to get back to Patrick Williams. I think he went to the perfect team because I think Billy Donovan is the perfect coach for him. Billy Donovan did a great job with that young Oklahoma City team this past year. Now he's got a young team in Cleveland. He's got a guy he can develop. I think he could be, and I know you, it's not your favorite player. I think he could be Paul George. 6'8",
player. Paul George may not be my favorite player, but if you can get Paul George out of that draft, at least, you know, physically Paul George, you're doing pretty good. You know what I was interested by? And you and I spoke about this. Our guy. I call him our guy because, I don't know, he's our guy. Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith all of a sudden jumps up and he sticks. Sticks did two things. I feel a little bit responsible for this, Seth, if you don't mind.
tell you take what. Credit.
Yeah, I'll take a little bit.
Take a bow. Stokes.
He was working out when he was a pregame behind Bruno Fernando, and Bruno looked like a pro. Like, Bruno was getting himself ready to play. Sticks looked like a high school kid. You know, he was better than everybody, and I'm going to come on the court, and I'm going to get 25 and 20, you know, rebound, you know, in a high school game. And I mentioned it on the air, and I talked to Mark Turgeon. He said, "Damn, we played that for Stick Smith 100 times." So I take credit for Stick Smith, Seth. I mean, that's just how I wrote. I love the kid.
He went to the right team.
He did. He went to the right team. They're going to have a guard get him the ball. He can shoot the ball. Look, defensively, all these guys are going to struggle initially in the NBA. We know that. But I'll tell you this. He's got broad shoulders. He's got long arms. He shoots it perfectly. You're going to see 20 to 30 pounds on that kid. Now, I don't know. You know, I covered him a ton. And I don't know, you know, the mentality of him when he gets into the NBA and gets money. Who the hell knows? I know this. You give me money after my sophomore, junior year in college, and you put me in the NBA, I'm a wreck. I guarantee you. But if he does what I think he's going to do, which is work and develop, I think they got a kid that's going to be an all-star in Stick Smith. I love that pick, Seth. You and I talked about him both on my radio show and on here. I thought that pick was phenomenal.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing, you got DeAndre Ayton, who's basically, you know, he's extremely athletic and blocks shots, move his feet, but more of a kind of an elbow down. Now you got Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Cale Bridges. I mean, you've got dudes, young, athletic, and Monty Williams. To me, he's kind of got kind of an ability to connect.
Don't you think when you talk about that team, like I always talk about, you got to fit your team. Your team has to fit. I think he fits right in there. I was looking at all of this. Like, look, if you're the number one pick in the draft, okay, well, there are certain teams that have to fit around you, right? You're the number one pick, for crying out loud. And I don't think that's going to necessarily be the way for success in Minnesota with the first pick. I think Wiseman has to fit into the team. These other guys, we'll see. You mentioned Patrick Williams. I think that's a pretty good fit. LaMelo Ball is going to get the ball in his hands. But I think if you go down this draft, man, nobody fits their team. Or let's put it this way. Jalen Smith fits his team as well as anybody fits their team coming into as a rookie, I would think.
I'll tell you the other thing. All right, let's get a little fun and a little seriousness. How would you like to coach your son-in-law? Doc Rivers, they make a trade for Seth Curry. How would you like to? I mean, he's coached his son. All right, that didn't work out all that well. Look, they need shooting. If you're going to play with Ben Simmons, obviously you need shooting. If you want to get Embiid back to where he's going to be his best, you need shooting. But you're coaching your son-in-law. What's that Thanksgiving meal like? If, like, you know, all of a sudden Seth's not playing because he's not guarding anyone. I mean, I think that's funny. I do like the Sixers draft, though. I like Tyler Bay. I love Tyrese Maxey. I'm a big Tyrese Maxey fan. I think that the guy plays with great joy. I like guys that love the game, that they've lost the game, that are caught up in the game. Have you, as many times as we've been around that kid, he's never down. And then I joke with Cal last night. Look at the Knicks. The Knicks have Kenny Payne, Cal's former assistant, yep. Kevin Knox, Julius Randle, and now, obviously, Emmanuel Quickley. You know what? The next move is going to go after Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker, and make that, like, you know, basically Big Blue Nation Northeast. But interesting.
They also got Worldwide West.
Yeah, and Worldwide West. Now I'll give you another one. The shock of the draft to me is the Jazz. Udoka Azubuike selected by the Jazz, 27. What do you think?
I think it's good. I think you mentioned him on my show the other day. I don't think he's quite a mountain masquerading as a man.
Less of a mountain now. He's less of a mountain. He used to be a mountain. Now he's a very large hill.
Yes. there is a valley beneath him. Let's put it that way. I don't know whether it's the rolling hills. I think, you know what, to me, that guy, if he comes and he works and he goes and does what he can, and it looks like he will, he'll have an effective NBA career. And you know what? A lot of people projected him in the second round. He ends up in the first. He gets guaranteed money. You know, good for him. What did you think of Cassius Winston dropping a little bit? I don't know if that's dropping, though. That's kind of where he was, wasn't it?
I said it this morning. I tweeted it out this morning. He's going to be a 10-year pro. It's going to be a 10-year pro. He's going to find a way because he makes the game easier for other people. He gets guys open shots. He gets people involved in the game. Now, I understand. Look, I joked on the radio thing I did last night. I mean, like, he makes me feel like, you know, I have a good body in relation to him.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but the guy makes plays. I thought both of those guys. I think Xavier Tillman, I thought that was, you know, a really good selection. I mean, I'm a big Xavier Tillman fan. I think he can really defend. He's traded to the Grizzlies. Obviously, you have Jaren Jackson, another member of Michigan State. The other thing is Xavier Tillman is a great ball screen offensive player, defensive player. So now you put him in ball screens with John Morant. I mean, think about how many times Cassius Winston connected with Xavier Tillman at a ball screen action. He catches everything around the basket. He's going to be a terrific, you know, ball screen defender. He's going to rebound. He's got a toughness. I think those were really good selections. See, what was the biggest surprise?
Let me just finish with those two kids. I put those two kids on my all-foreign team. Like, because I think those two kids are adult. I think they have more, they're pros. Like, I watched Xavier Tillman. He's the one guy that I saw, and I don't know the numbers. I'm sure Garza scored some points, but he took Luka Garza out of the game. And Luka Garza in college is incredibly hard to take out of a game. And Cassius Winston, to me, is a 10-year pro, unless he decides he wants to run for mayor of Lansing or Detroit, or he wants to be governor of Michigan. And I'm serious about this. This is a kid that got into Harvard. Those two guys would be on my all-foreign team. Seth, I'm going to give you a team in the mid-major world. I've been studying a little bit because I have them opening night in South Dakota. Northern Iowa is going to win some ball games, baby.
Ooh, no doubt.
Iowa. Here's the deal. Texas A&M dropped out of the crossover with the formerly the Bahamas. So Texas A&M drops out because of the coronavirus in South Dakota. And so Huggy in his first game, you know, okay, we're going to play a second tier. Whoa. They play Northern Iowa. And Northern Iowa, Texas A&M, just as a point of comparison, Texas A&M was like 118th last year in the net. Northern Iowa with the green kid, 48. This is a good basketball. I can't wait.
25-6, man. They were 25-6. They only lost six games. They were 14-4 in the Valley. I mean, and they return. I mean, think about this. They return Green. They return Burkow. They return Fight, the undersized big guy. They run great. Great offense. Defensively, they play pack line. So I mean, Huggy. That court is going to shrink.
You know, I need opening night. I need a Huggy blow up. I need a Huggy crazy.
I can tell you one thing: what you don't need. Don't do what I did in the Armed Forces Classic when Huggy played Texas A&M at Ramstein, and I had the great idea of say, Huggy, you're going to do it. Let's do an in-game interview. They just turned it over and took three bad shots. They were supposed to be good. We thought A&M was terrible. And I come walking over there, and, you know, obviously Bob and I are really close friends. And he just looks at me and goes, really? You know, and he's sitting on that stool, absolutely miserable. And, like, right before we're going on, he goes, all right, I'm all right. I know you don't want me doing this right now. I'll do it.
Hey, but I'm telling you, man, I was watching some film on them last night. A.J. Green could really, really, really go. He's a player of the year in the league.
He's a pro.
He's a shooting fool, man. I can't wait for that opening game less than a week. Holy cow. Whoa, less than a week.
How about that? Game. Now, are they going to just have fewer teams, or did they add another team?
No, they added Northern Iowa. That's what I'm saying.
That's what they actually added Northern Iowa, which makes sense in terms of locale.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And Northern Iowa was going to play in an MTE in Nebraska, but then they said, wait a second, this is a better opportunity. And Northern Iowa, as you well know, with Ben Jacobson, dude's a full-time coach. He ain't afraid, man. He ain't afraid.
And they'll be hard-nosed and tough. I'll tell you a team that's going to play Kentucky early in the season. In fact, Ravi has that game. Richmond's the real deal. Richmond returns. They return five starters. Unfortunately, one got hurt, and Sherrod, the Sherrod kid, who could really shoot the ball. But Richmond's a team. They could be this year's Dayton. I mean, that's how good they have four. They got 3 fifth-year starters returning, which, you know, just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, they're a tough physical team. You know, the kid Blake Francis can really score it. Golden can really pass it and make plays. Gilliard is another guy that can make plays, a little undersized. I mean, they are a really efficient team. They shoot the three. I mean, they came off a 24-win season, which is, you know, like, you win that many games, right? You expect to win. And I'll tell you another team in the A-10 that's going to be really good is St. Louis. Jordan Goodwin's the best rebounding guard in the country. He's like 6'3". The guy averages 10 rebounds a game. He's an absolute beast. Absolute beast. Hassan French is another double-figure rebounding guy. They return basically their whole lineup. They shot the ball well, 36% from the three. They rebound. They must rebound the ball. They're an elite rebounding team. And they only turned it over 10 times a game last year. I mean, they return their whole core unit. Those two teams in the A-10 are going to be really good.
We gave you a MAC team, and this is not a homer pick. I gave you this kid, Justin Turner, last year when you and I did. I'm not sure, and I was there for one of them. He beat Ohio University with like 8 straight points, including a game winner. I'm not sure there's a kid in the country that closes games better than Justin Turner of Bowling Green. Now, here's the deal, Seth. He shopped around. You know, he said, hey, look, I'm going to transfer. He was going to be eligible immediately. So what happened was basically every Big Ten school in the Midwest, you know, tried to get involved in Justin Turner. And I'm going to give Justin Turner great credit, man. He went back. Now, that Bowling Green opens up with Michigan. They won 21 games last year. Justin Turner, I think, is on pace to break my former player Anthony Stacy's all-time scoring record there. But Justin Turner, man, he's 6'4", he's 200 pounds, he's a guard, he's a pro. Now, I don't know if he's an NBA pro, but he's going to make a lot of money coming out of college here. And I'm telling you, there will be, I think this year, there's going to be an Elite Eight team come out of one of these leagues, whether it's the Missouri Valley, whether it's the MAC, I don't know. But don't be surprised at Bowling Green. First time, my biggest disappointment in life isn't how I look, isn't turning the ball over against Virginia. It is not getting Bowling Green into the NCAA tournament when we had four different bubble type things. I'm not sure this is the year because the MAC is a one big league. So I'm not, you know, but I know this. They're the favorite to win the league. They should be the favorite to win the league. And Justin Turner got a chance to be an All-American.
I'm going to give you a couple others. Off the beaten path, Terry Taylor. Austin Peay. Austin returns two really good players. Austin Peay is an athletic, hard-playing team. Terry Taylor is a 6'6 kid who can rebound the ball, score it around the basket, finishes around the basket. Austin Peay will be a team in your bracket if they win. They always see that is going to be a tough out. Isaiah Miller from UNCG. UNCG plays a really, really exciting style of basketball. They make you react to them defensively. Miller is a dominant player. He's an active defender. He can make plays. He can score. He can rebound it. And then you talk about the MAC. The kid at Ohio University, Jason Preston, the big guard.
Yeah.
He's fun to watch. I was in the studio and Ohio University was on. Size, length, vision, feel. I thought he's a really interesting player. Now, do you consider the American a mid-major? So I don't consider American a mid-major.
I don't.
Yeah, because so, you know, I think that Memphis is going to be really talented. Memphis has helped themselves in a lot of different ways. Landers Nolly is going to give them another score, obviously. The big kid freshman, Cissé, is going to be really, really good. What they've got to do is they've got to clean up their guard play. Quinones is going to be better in year two. I think Jeffries is going to be really good. Memphis, Houston, and the American, I think, are going to be really tough to handle. So
I got to ask you about a school that made a lot of noise. And it made a lot of noise because the big kid, Makur Maker, and Nogel Eastern both went to historically black college, which is Howard. Let me ask you this question. 1-15 last year in the league, Howard was. Let me ask you a question. You get two guys like that. Kenny Blakely's building a program. what is a reasonable expectation? Because that league's no joke, man. Our guy Moten can coach his brains out. What do you think? What's an expectation with a program that has two high-profile guys coming in?
Well, first of all, Eastern, what's his attitude going to be going to a different level?
Absolutely. I don't know.
I mean, like, you know, look, Kenny's a great guy. I think the world of him. But here's Nojel Eastern, you know, going from charters, best hotels, everything, you know, playing in front of Big Ten crowds, every game's an event, to a different environment. So how does he adjust to that? And that's going to be a big question. The Maker kid is really talented. Now, he's not a one, and I don't think he's a one-and-done lottery pick, but for that league. But in that league, 6'10", having a guard, 6'5", you know, like to me, an advantage I had when I was at Long Beach State, we had a team of 6'7" guys. So when we played USC, which we were fortunate enough to have a lot of success with, when we played high major Pac-12 or Oregon States where they played traditional lineups, I had 4'6", 7" guys at a point guard. Let me tell you something. We were hard to match up with because all of a sudden we made bigs guard all over the floor. In that league, will they take him away from the basket? In that league, will they be able to attack him because he's not physically strong enough? I think expectation is unrealistic, and how they handle the expectation will be interesting. How can you handle the expectation? If you're an Ivy League coach right now, how do you recruit?
Boy, I got nothing for you. I don't know. I mean, I literally don't know. How do you, you know, Jim Boeheim's son's leaving, Jimmy.
Yep.
How do you retain? I'm not talking about retaining the guy, you know, player number 4 through 13. But when you know, the Ivy League education's a draw. I get all that. I've said many times, I'm dealing with a Harvard student in my house right now. They can't go back, and it's terrible. I don't have the answer to that, Seth. So do you think this Ivy League basketball was coming? Like, Tommy Amaker changed, right?
Ooh.
Does it fall back big time now? Does it start sliding to where it was, kind of an afterthought because of this year? It doesn't take long. Hey, momentum is a mother. Momentum comes and goes like nobody's business, man. And I don't know, Seth. I don't know. Hey, look, you recruit because we've got the, quote, best education, you know, college experience. We're true college, all that kind of stuff. But for dudes that want a ball and get that education, I don't know how you do it. I don't.
Well, how do they beat the people? Like, if you're Harvard right now, like, Tommy, like, my thing is Tommy Amaker. Does he look to say, you know what? I love Harvard. I love what we've been able to do. I love the environment and the identity that we have. But why don't I go to, you know, a high major that has the same academic integrity? But, you know, to me, it's a real question on how do you move forward? You're right. The momentum that they've established, I think you lose all that because you can't say you can have the best of both worlds if you're in a situation where you've decided to basically cancel the season. It's hard to sell it. You can still sell the education. You can still, look, I worked at Columbia. You know, we used to say 4 for 40. You go to school for 4 years, it impacts the rest of your life, right? It's a lifelong association. It is a unique environment. It puts you in a special class. The network that you have when you walk out this door of being a Columbia grad or a Harvard grad or a Yale grad or a Princeton grad. But now I think that the pool of prospects, real players, has just shrunk.
Seth, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can go back to the way you recruited back at Columbia.
Yeah.
Right? You can do that. But, I mean, let's be honest. I believe this. I think Tommy Amaker got really smart. I think Tommy Amaker came in and said, hey, look, we can do this both ways. There's enough smart kids out. Not genius kids out there. Not smart kids. Hell, everybody's pretty smart. But you got to be a genius to get into freaking Harvard and do well in Harvard. There's enough genius kids out there that want to be real basketball players. And if I'm a kid now, I got to say, yeah, I mean, I would have to really weigh it. I'd have to go back even to when I was in school and Harvard called me and I'm like, man, that'd be great. But I want a ball, right? I mean, you know, I can get a decent education and stuff. I don't know. I don't know about that one. That's a tough one. I
really believe that that league had to make a choice. And the choice they made, if you are serious about ball, And you can say it's only 1 year, but it's also it speaks volumes of how the institutions look. And they can say that it's the student athlete welfare, but you know the reality is that as opposed to maybe other places, I'm not saying right or wrong, they're treating men's basketball or basketball no differently than they're treating any other sport on campus.
Seth, they're treating sports, and I don't think this is wrong or right. I'm with you on this.
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong or right. I mean, you know, they care about the
treating sports like it's an intramural program within the university, and everybody is the same. Now, let me give you the difference in that. Like New Mexico State, they say, all right, we want to have basketball, so we're going to relocate to Phoenix. That's not happening in the Ivy League. You know, just being around it for a couple of years, very superficially on the outside as my stepdaughter's playing, and we would go, this is treated as intramurals. You're a part of our university. We're shutting this down, thus we're shutting you down. It's not treated as, you know, like, I think they shut down the state of Michigan. But guess what? Michigan's still going to play football, right? Ohio State, they're shutting down Ohio. Well, what'd they do with Ohio State, Indiana this weekend? They just shut the games down. You know what they said? No fans, no family, no friends, no, but they're still playing the game. The Ivy League said, we are shutting it down, period. And there's a big difference there. So, look, SMU football, now I'm not saying it's going to be the same, but SMU football got the death penalty in the 80s and have never made it back. And that was only 1 year, too. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. Let's go one last league, Mountain West. I think Mountain West, and I'm not sure I look at it as a mid-major league, but I think Mountain West is really a good conference. I think the Mountain West is getting better. San Diego State, Malachi Flynn yesterday, great selection, by the way. Toronto, I think he's almost – Malachi Flynn is Fred VanVleet 2.0 potentially. Tough, defends, playmakes, makes shots. But they still have guys. You know, I mean, they still have – you know, Jordan Shackle, they still have the kid, Matt Mitchell. You know, they did lose three really good players, but they're not going anywhere. UNLV is going to get better. They get the kid Jenkins, who was at South Dakota State, who can really score to complement what they're doing. And Utah State is really, really good. I mean, they are really good. And, they, you know, I understand they lost Sam Merrill, but they still got, you know, the Katie kid back, they're extremely well coached. They play really hard. They play with great spacing. So I think the Mountain West is an underappreciated conference because they play their games late at night. They don't have great television exposure, but the quality of basketball in that conference is really good.
Hey, Seth, now just understand something. All right. Benetti and I did a game out there, so they get all the exposure they need. They get the high-profile guys with me and Benetti, buddy. So,
I can understand that.
Jalen Harris.
I can understand that.
Jalen Harris.
Jalen Harris, your guy, that's right. In Nevada, you know, your guy Alfred's guy, he's athletic and can make shots. I mean, the conference is really good. Justin Bean and Cato are really – the kid named Cato is a shot-blocking fool who has a chance to be a pro. I mean, they've got good players. Sam Merrill got drafted. I think he was the next to last pick in the draft from Utah State.
Sam Merrill got drafted. Seth, let me ask you a question. You ever just sitting at home and all of a sudden your TV turns on? I have a ghost in our house. His name is Teddy. There is. He followed Lee from her house in it's true. He leaves pennies around our house, and he left pennies around Lee's house. It's unbelievable. His name is Teddy. He just turned the TV on. I'm sitting right here. TV just popped on. Here's the deal about the Mountain West, Jeff. I'm telling you, people don't know this, but I equate it to a Western Big Ten in this sense. You can go to a Pac-12 game, and really, some gyms, they just don't show up. Mountain West, they show up. Like I did the San Diego State Nevada game. It was Malachi against Harris, and it was crazy.
You're breaking up a little bit. Frozen in time. We were frozen in time, but you're back.
See, that's Teddy. I started talking about Teddy, and I got frozen.
Teddy said, "You know, you're not giving me no respect. Put a little Teddy respect on my name."
Hey, Teddy was a little kid that that died in the house that Lee moved into. And I'm telling you, Teddy's been here. We talk to Teddy once in a while. Hey, Teddy, leave me alone today, man.
Hey, Teddy, we're trying to finish this podcast. Like, give us some time. And don't come to my house. I got enough drama in my house.
Hey, he took the Ramblers of Loyola Chicago, one of my favorite teams growing up, to the Final Four. Porter Mosier joins us from isolation. Hey, look, talking to us two clowns, isolation should have included taking your phone off the hook too, pal.
Hey, I've lost everything else. I lost my sense of taste, my smell. At least I got my big ears and my hearing's going good, so I'd love to talk to you guys. But it's the loss of taste is crazy. That's the one that's just tough.
Like you say you lost your taste. I've heard this about the virus. So, like, you have a piece of pizza. You hung out with Majerus forever. You have to like to eat. So, like, you go and have a piece of pizza. If you're allowed to have a piece of pizza, what do you taste?
I tell you, Seth, I don't want to make light. I'm gonna joke about it here in a second. But, like our team, we're through the tough part. Like, I'm through the tough part, thank God. You know, because I know it's hit a lot of people hard. So I'm through the tough part. I feel great, so I can joke about it. So with that said, it's crazy. Like, I mean, you know, I'm used to being from Chicago eating Melnati's pizza. I might as well get a tombstone and save some money because I can't even taste a good pie. And you know, so it's just nuts because it's I didn't notice it. You always hear that from people saying they lost their taste. And I'm like, well, how can you lose your taste? And then I was, the first time it happened, I was brushing my teeth and I'm like, I couldn't taste the mint. I couldn't taste, I'm like, this is crazy. And that's, and that was like the last symptom. I was starting to feel better when that set in. And when you talk to people, they say sometimes it lasts a month that you don't have your taste.
Wow. What was the worst you found? How severe was the virus for you?
It was pretty bad. It was all hell kind of broke loose. Like, we've been going for 16 weeks. We got back, you know, the NCAA said you could practice July 20th. We came back the 10th, quarantined and started right then and have been going every week. We did like small pods for the first week of just all fundamentals. And then after about 3 weeks, because our guys have been sitting out already for 4 months, we're like, coach, let's go and get after it. So we went to one pod. And we went every week testing, nothing. Like, routine, our guys were really diligent, and Chicago's been pretty hotbed for it. And 16 weeks, nothing. This a Monday ago, we're getting ready to go down to practice. We test in the morning. We all get emailed our phone, and all of a sudden, I'm ready to take the court, and my trainer says, three guys tested positive. And I'm like, oh. And then all of a sudden, so we sent everyone to the room, quarantined, coaches went home, and we took the PCR test just to verify that it wasn't a false positive. And then Wednesday it comes back as positive, so we're trying to do the contact tracing. And Thursday, all hell broke loose. Everybody was like starting to feel bad, so we tested everybody again. 16 of 17 players, 4 of 6 coaches.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was tough. And you know, zooming with the parents and just organizing. And thankfully, everybody, about five of the guys had no symptoms. A lot of the guys had, you know, chills, fever, body aches, headaches, and they got through it and they were fine. For me, my worst symptom was the headache. It was a headache and chills and body ache. Those were the worst ones for me. I never got shortness of breath. None of our guys ever got shortness of breath. Nobody had any serious symptom with it. So thankfully, I know people really got to go to the hospital if they have shortness of breath. And that's what I've learned through this. If you have shortness of breath, go to the hospital because it can escalate quick. And none of us did. None of us had any of that. And thankfully, but it was crazy how fast it spread. Like, zero tests to everyone positive. And you know, the only thing I can think of is we did a inner squad scrimmage Saturday morning. I mean, I wear a mask every practice. It's the only thing I can think of is the scrimmage. And this is what I'll say. I've said this to the Missouri Valley coaches. The only thing that I can think of is that in practice, I'm really diligent. Like, I stand 15 feet apart. I wear a mask. When I draw something up, they kind of stand like 10 feet away. But we had our first inter-squad scrimmage where I was like sitting on the bench with our team and the other group was on the other side. And at a media timeout, I think I was just caught up and they were kind of close. This is the only thing I can think of how I got it. Is someone that they must have already had it because it spread through the team like wildfire. But like when I was drawing something up, and then you know how it is, you start asking your guys and you're talking and they probably were just breathing right down on my hand. That's the only thing I can think of. Sweating, breathing hard, talking back, and my hand's sticking out because I'm drawing on the board, and then I might have wiped my face or something. That's the only thing. The only thing I tell coaches is like, man, you've got to watch when you start getting these games, your hand or something, because it could come down on your hand.
Jeez.
Wow.
Coach.
I know. I know.
But the bottom line, are you back practicing? What? You're in quarantine. What do the players do during quarantine?
So we're all in isolation. It's really tough mentally. Like,
yeah.
Because isolation, you can't open your door. So I have two freshmen in dorms. They got to get food delivered and dropped outside the front of the door. They cannot walk out the door. So you have isolation for 10 days. Our protocol is similar to the Big Ten, I think. It's a 21-day back to play. It's 10 days isolation. The remaining 4 of your 2-week quarantine, you can at least go outside and get some fresh air. Then at 2 weeks, you have a 7-day progression back. Like the first 2 days are 15 minutes of just like jogging, shooting. Then the progression goes to like 30 minutes of you can put them through like a drill, you know. Then it escalates to an hour. Like it's a week progression of things to like the 21st day you can play again.
So where are you guys going to be at in terms of scheduling?
Oh, that's one of the things I want to bring up too is like I lost the beginning games. We lost our beginning games and we had some good games planned. So I have tons of open spot. But here's the thing. We're a great schedule because we're not going to cancel anymore. Like there's no way our game will be shut down because everybody's had it now. So we're a good team to schedule. You know, teams are worried about scheduling teams and they're going to cancel on them. They're going to lose the game. That's not going to be us. But so we need a lot of games. We have December 15th, the 23rd. We're trying to scramble, get anybody to play right now.
Let me follow up on that, coach. When you say you're trying to get other teams to play, like I'm doing the games in South Dakota and A&M dropped out, Northern Iowa popped in, you know, I know you don't know the exact number, but how many people are in your same boat looking for games right now? You call them and they say, yeah, we need one. How many people are out there?
Not as many as you think. Like I've been dealing with this for months, Dan, because originally we were in the Myrtle Beach Classic, the ESPN one in Myrtle Beach. Then everything was going to go to Orlando. Then we were going to be working in that Orlando bubble. And then that thing blew up. Then we were going to go to Indianapolis and, you know, we were kind of aligned with Cincinnati and Duquesne. We were going to play some good games there in Indy. And then now we've backed out recently. That kind of is blown up. But like some people are deciding that they don't want to go to bubbles. They just want to stay home. Like I saw Texas A&M do it. I think Ohio State did it. You're seeing some teams that were going to go and now they're like, ho, 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 we're just going to stay on our own campus. And so I think that's happening a lot, but there's not as many. I mean, we're scrambling hard to find games. And then some of the leagues like the Big East and some of the leagues and like we were supposed to play at Davidson and I'm still praying that game will go, but like December 19th, but the Atlantic 10 came in and said, you guys are playing Rhode Island on the 18th. So like stuff like that is, or something like that. They're playing a game. The Atlantic 10 is playing games before Big East. And it's just been hard to get games. But I think you're going to see more than ever. It's going to be like nothing we've ever seen before. I'm hoping it's going to be like, hey, Porter, we got a cancellation in a week. You want to play? You know, stuff like that.
Right.
And I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I am like my hands raised and I'm going to have a lot of things. And I think you're going to see it in the league. The Valley is going to go to back-to-back games. It isn't for sure, but there's a chance. And if we do that, let's say we play Sunday, Monday. That leaves like on a Thursday, if another conference has a cancellation and you need to get a game in, you might be able to throw a non-conference game in there, something like that, with a lot of these leagues going back-to-back games.
Jeez.
Some way. Right. Now, how about just the sheer number of schools, you know, in your region. I mean, just getting like three schools together, putting them in a pod for 3 days and playing round robin.
I would love it. I know the Big Ten, Northwestern and Illinois are around close, and but that's their schedule has been different. The Big East got four games early, so I know Marquette and DePaul is close to us. But I think it's the most logical thing to do, and I'm all for it. I just wish we, like anything, you got to get other people to agree and say yes too. But it's the most logical thing, especially around here. We even got Butler close. I mean, there's so many teams close to our area. It's just mind blowing that we can't get games.
Dan, will you arrange that game, please? I'm putting Dan in charge of the Butler and Loyola game. Call Barry Collier. Let's get this thing done.
Let's go, Dan.
We'll play it at Loyola first so that we can get the television rights. You'll do the game. Boom, it's done. Get that done. How is your team handled? Like, you have a veteran team. I mean, a veteran.
We do,
team.
Seth.
You got my man, Krautwig. I love my guy, Krautwig. I mean, you got two guys who played in that Final Four team. I've been saying this a lot. The way a coach reacts to the interruptions, to the contact tracing, to the virus, to the cancellations, their team will take on that personality. But you've got this veteran team. How have they dealt with the uncertainty? Because you talk about mental health, not knowing when you're going to play, being you've been at it since July. How are they handling that?
You know, with a veteran team, they've played against each other for years. So you know how it is. You always go through that lull in the fall with your team where they're like, holy cow, they're just sick of playing against each other and they want to play against someone new. Well, our guys were no different with that. So they were excited and it got moved back to the 25th and then Orlando got blown up. So they still didn't know who they were playing. So they still were handling it great. And then this hit and we've just been constantly talking about, man, this setback is not going to be our story. This setback is going to be a part of our success story because, you know, we're going to fight through this. We're Zooming every day doing it, talking hoops and reviewing old games together, doing everything to keep our minds going. But the bright side, if you're going to look through it, thankfully everybody's healthy. Nobody had serious complications with it. But the bright side is that it all happened at once. And now there's going to be no shutdowns, hopefully, moving forward. And I think the guys are bummed, so bummed that they can't start, and it's going to be really hard on the 25th when the teams play.
Right.
But when we get on the other side of this, our mental state is going to be pretty good. I'm excited with the guys. Krautwig, you mentioned Krautwig. He is the biggest throwback you've ever seen. He's
just
a kid who embraces practice. He's the loudest kid in the gym every day. You walk in the gym, he's walking through the tunnel of practice and he's already starting chirping. I mean, he's the kid that when you got bigs on one end, guards on the other, he'll do his rep and he'll be chirping down at the guards, yelling at the guards. and he's just one of those guys you love to coach.
Got a good team, man.
Well, I just want to talk about Cameron Krautwig for a minute. I mean, how many bigs lead? How many anybody across college basketball leads the team in scoring, rebounding, and assists? You know what I mean? I mean, that does not happen very often, not even a little bit. That's pretty good. And you know what? I had two friends whose kids played against Krautwig in high school. And you guys went to the Final Four. They're like, Dan, I swear to God, man, if you'd have told me Cameron Krautwig was a starting center on a Final Four team, I'd have told you they're crazy. But they didn't know the kid like you knew the kid, and they didn't know the kid the way you just described the kid as being all energy.
Yeah, Dan, that's the thing where people made such a big deal about why so many people passed on him. And you can understand that, like, because so much is the eye test sometimes when you're running in and out of gyms and you're trying to catch kids. You might see a kid and you might see him on a list, say, hey, I got to go put my eyes on this kid. And you go put your eyes on the kid and you walk into Durango gym and you look at him and you're like, oh, shoot. He doesn't pass the eye test. But you watch him over and over and over, and all of a sudden you'll see him catch it and outlet pass to the other side of half court on a frozen rope. All of a sudden you'll see him, you know, fake a handoff and throw a skip to the opposite corner for a three. You'll see him do an up and under old school, you know, an old school whip move under up and under, like a fundamental. And the more you watch it, the more you saw that. And it didn't matter that he wasn't dunking and watching him in a warm-up line and he's doing layups at 6'9". It didn't bother me. I mean, cause I saw him so many, I just followed him the whole entire, starting from his like sophomore year. But he, you know, he's a classic case of his intangibles are higher than his raw ability. And I'm not saying he doesn't have raw ability. He does. He's got a tremendous touch. He's got, you know, just such a high, but his intangibles are off the charts, off the charts.
Yeah. The eye test thing's a big thing. I say that all the time when I think about Dan and Lee. I mean, like, you know, she looked at Dan and said, he doesn't pass the eye test, but you know what? I'm gonna take him on as a project.
Hey, Porter, you're on the phone, but Seth and I are doing this on a Skype, and you'll appreciate this. Seth just put on Harry Carey glasses. Like,
there you go. Cubby.
Like, damn.
Let's go.
Like Harry. Can you see the field from where you're at? Big Coke bottles are just nuts right now. Holy hell, what am I seeing?
These are my new readers, man. I finally gave into it. I went over to the store and said, you know, it was bad. First, I said, you know, I go to a restaurant and I ask my wife what to order because I can't see the menu because it's too dark. I'm starting to do all this reading for the season. The first time my brother, you know, said, eventually you're going to need glasses. Well, I'm starting to do all this reading. And I'm like holding it away from me. I'm trying to find that ideal spot to hold the piece of paper. Yeah. And I said, all right, that's it. I'm going to go in. I'm not going to get an exam. Porter,
he can see Mars with those things. He can tell you what's on the moon with those bad boys. Holy hell, did he just put on. What do you think of your league, Porter?
I think it's really, really good. And that's the hard part is anybody can beat anybody. And it's just been like that. But you know, you got to start with Northern Iowa. You know, mark it here. I'm telling you, A.J. Green is one of the best players college basketball doesn't know about. A.J. Green is a 6'5 shot maker. I was watching some of the guys getting drafted last night and some of the people on the board. And I'm telling you, A.J. had his name in, then he took it out. But he is a shot maker. He can make shots like Tyler Hero. I'm telling you, he's an unbelievable shot maker at 6'5", but he can create. And he's got a tremendous feel. But he was the player of the year in our Valley last year as a sophomore. He's really good. They got a good team. They got another first team center back. But I think there's other teams like Bradley. Bradley's very good. Indiana State, Greg Lansing. I mean, they got Tyreek Key, one of the best players in our league. So Missouri State talented. I mean, I just think there's a lot of teams that can beat you. But it's going to be a heck of a deal. But Northern, you probably got to start with Northern Iowa and us. I think we're going to be right there at the top.
Will you send Dan a full scouting report? Because that's his first game. And I'm just trying to make sure he has a good broadcast.
Northern Iowa? Northern Iowa?
Yeah. Hey, I have Northern Iowa against West Virginia because Texas A&M dropped out of it. It used to be the Battle of Atlantis, and now it's the Battle of Sioux Falls, which is a little different. But, you know, it's still.
I'm blessed. I'm in Battle of Atlantis next year. I'm blessed we didn't get called that. We're in it next year.
Right. There's a little difference, but I'll tell you this. As you said earlier, I'm just happy to have hoops. You know, I think we all are. I mean, hoops is hoops. Hey, Final Four a couple of years ago, Sister Jean, how has that impacted your program now that we've moved forward a couple of years?
You know, she's 101. She turned 101 in August. She's doing great. I mean, we've had her on Skype with the guys. We always open up the season with a prayer and she Skyped the prayer in. And so, she's the Final Four, how it impacted the program. I can't even put it to words, you know, that experience of getting there. And it's a dual headed monster because that Michigan game haunts me because we were up 10 in the second half, in the second half being away to play on Monday night. So, but that's my therapist's problem, but this, how it's helped here. Like I'm telling you, I took over here 9 years ago with my staff and, you know, Loyola Chicago, they're like, which Loyola is it? You know, like, and now it's just where we were at and then where we are now. It's just been unbelievable. And the guys, the culture, they're wired to win. And like, you know, winning breeds that. And and it's just times it by 10 when you get to that point. And Sister Jean is still a huge part of everything we do. And she was before that. It's just, after we beat Miami, all our guys are running off the floor and they're hugging an elderly woman in a wheelchair, a nun. And they're like, whoa, 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 what's that? And that's how it became a phenomenon. But she's amazing. She's still, you know, with our guys, we have a social justice panel with our student athletes. She's on it. She does stuff. She's emailing our guys. The entire pandemic, she basically emailed our guys once every 2 weeks. The entire pandemic. Every one of them individually.
Now, I got a question. Sister Jean and the rest of the loyal faithful, right? You go to the Final Four. Every administration and alumni and, quote, nation, so you're the Rambler Nation, thinks they're Gonzaga now. I mean, so what is the expectation? Like, what is the expectation? And I always say your investors got to equal your expectation. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, you're a Final Four coach. You've had this tremendous success and you've had continued success. Let's face it, 21-11, 13-5 in the league last year. I mean, what is it like around there? Because, I mean, you're good, but everyone's going, well, we want to be Gonzaga. We want to go be in Final Four every year. I mean, how do people around there handle that?
You know, probably the same as a lot of, I mean, they want to win. We've tasted it and we want to get back there, and it's led by me. I mean, I'm out in front of that group. I want to get back there. And, but the people here, the culture at Loyola has been great. They really embrace it. They've had years and years of starving. In 85, they went to the Sweet 16 with Al Frederick Hughes. And then since then, so for 30 years, they had like three winning seasons. So they were just starving for it. So they're just loving that we're relevant, that we're at the top. I'm telling you, the fan base has been really good, but yeah, they want to win and go to the tournament again. We do too. And led by me. I mean, that's part of it. But it hasn't been this, like, the next year, Final Four or die. Loyola's fan base has not been like that to our student-athletes or to us. They want to win, don't get me wrong. But it hasn't been like, I see some coaching friends, they'll get to a level, and their fan base is like, we got to do it the next year, you're out. I mean, no, it hasn't been like that at all. They've been passionate. They want to win. But I think they had such a long drought. They just want to be at the top and continue to be having a chance to be, you know, at that spot again.
It's great stuff. Great stuff. Hey, man, take care of yourself. Take care of your family.
No, I appreciate it. I tell you, I haven't told anybody I had it. That release, I didn't. This is the first time I've told people that I had. Everyone asked me, like, you know, because some of the Coach Izzo and Coach Boeheim put out a release that they had it. They're like, Porter, you got to put out a release that you have it. I'm like, I go, hell no. That's like one of my walk-ons declaring for the draft. I can put a release that I got it on.
That's the line of the podcast.
Oh, man. That's great. Porter, thank you so much, man. You're always great.
All right.
We appreciate it.
Be well, hey, brother. Thanks, guys. Take all care.
That's like a walk-on. But that was so good. He's such a good dude.
See why parents love him and players want to play for him, my man.
Yeah, I mean, these guys play hard, and he, you know, really good. And he's got a great – he's right. You know, he's in such a good place. You know, like, it's almost like he probably has had opportunities, but it's like an NBA trade. You never know what you're getting, you know what I mean? And I think he's, you know, happy is a good thing.
They've done with that campus, where that campus is up there north, just north of the city. It's a pretty good spot. It's a pretty good spot. People, you know, you get, as you said, you don't mess with happy, man. And a good job is one. Is the great, completely insane Kevin O'Neill told me a long time ago, a good job is one you can win at, and he can win there, and he's won there. And I can't wait to see how this season unfolds, because they really, if you think about it, with the number of cases that they've had, both on the court and in the in their coaches, they're kind of like the guinea pig. They're kind of the test dummy for this, right? I mean, he's
got 90 days clear, right?
Yeah, he's the guy that you know, he's like the worst case scenario. Right? He's sitting here right now, 4 or 5 days away, and he's got to get a games. He's got to get his team healthy. Then he's got to get his team in shape. And then while he's doing this, everybody's playing. He's not. So it's going to be fascinating. I think we should follow on this podcast and get back with him, you know, maybe in a month or two on how this has gone, because they are the test. They are the worst case scenario to this point. You know, it may change. It may be a worse one, but they're the worst case scenario to this point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'll tell you what, we covered a lot of territory today. We got the draft in. We got some mid-majors. Porter gave us an update on dealing with the pandemic. And I thought his line, you know, here's this setback is not going to be our story. It's a great line, man. It's a great line. And I think for all of us, we need to learn that with everything that's going on in with the pandemic, right? We can't let it be. So we've got to deal with it. It is what it is. But you've got to find a way to understand plans, protocol, patients, and make sure that, you know, those things are covered and then deal with it. And you can't let the virus be your story. Be bigger than the virus.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.